in the bathroom mirror.
"What's wrong?"
I asked in a voice that was husky with sleep.
"I don't feel like myself."
"What do you mean?"
"I still look like a techsmith, but I'm becoming too much like one of you, a pure human."
I yawned and eyed the toilet wistfully. I'd had more than my share of beer tonight, and I was feeling the urge.
"Well, could you—"
"I want to apologize, James,"
she said seriously.
For what?"
"I can't maintain this fiction any longer. I must tell you what you're going to face out there at Epsilon Leperus."
She was so serious, I felt my mind growing worried and waking up. I hated that feeling in the middle of the night.
"How long have you been sitting up, anyway?" I asked.
She ignored the question.
"You brought me home with you, to Earth,"
she said.
I would still be dead if it wasn't for you. I was permed."
She was staring at the mirror again, buck naked and looking great. But at that moment all I could do was cast wistful glances at the toilet.
"Girl, I totally understand what you're going through," I told her.
"You do?"
"I've been through it more times than I can count. Death, revival, thinking about what was and what might have been. It's a grim modern reality we all have to deal with."
"Yes,"
she said. Suddenly she stepped past me and went back to bed. With a great sense of relief, I used the toilet thoroughly. Coming back out and snapping off the light, I slipped into bed with her under a single cool sheet. She was so still and so quiet, I wondered if she'd gone to sleep again. But she hadn't.
"They are known as the Ninth Tentacle,"
she said.
What?
"That's what the cephalopods call them. Their ninth appendage."
Who are we talking about exactly?"
"Some of them march in squares of nine. Others are very tall and thin, and they stink like animals. Still another type is so huge, such slobbering idiots, they can barely be trained not to consume the enemy soldiers they strike down."
I felt a chill go through me. "Litimates?" I asked. "Trackers? Giants?" She levered herself up suddenly, making the sheet whisper and rasp.
"I'm sorry, James. I wish I wasn't the one who had to tell you this."
"Let me put this together. You're saying this planet, a world circling Epsilon Leperus, is the home world of the genetically altered soldiers the squids used to fight against Earth?"
"Not just Earth. They've bred and cloned millions. Billions. The world is a red hell with an orange sky. They know nothing of civility, at least not the baser types you've met with."
"How do you know so much about them?" I asked.
We created them. For the cephalopods. At least we created the means to mass-produce them from their prototypes."
"How in God's name did you do that?"
"It's complex biology. Vats, artificial wombs, tech not unlike the revival machines you know so well. That's why I feel terrible guilt tonight. I've never felt such a sensation before."
"Are you worried about me heading out there to deal with them, or about all humanity, for twisting up your own genetic cousins?" The second I asked that, I felt a pang of my own. I'd driven a knife into her in the middle of her confession. But it was hard not to be bitter. I'd seen millions of people die right here on Earth when these clones of hers had invaded our green lands to the north.
"I'm worried about all of us,"
she said.
"I feel bad for all our crimes, those that have already impacted humanity and those yet to bear fruit."
My mind fogged over, thinking about what gruesome technological terrors her people may have invented that I didn't even know about yet. I found myself unable to take in the full scope of it. Quietly, Florimel stood up and began putting her clothes on in the dark. I watched her for a few seconds, unsure how I should respond. We'd just had a great time in bed, but could that really erase all the sins this woman had just owned up to? "Florimel, wait," I said at last, getting up and touching her arms with my hands.
You don't reject me?
"That depends," I said. "What would the squids have done to you and your people if you'd refused to comply with their orders?" She shrugged.
"Tortured and killed our leaders until the rest complied, or until we were all dead."
"Did anyone die that way?" She nodded.
"My parents, among others. Both of them."
"I'm sorry."
"Don't be. It was a long time ago. I barely remember as I was a child. That was their solution, you see. To remove the oldest of us and work purely with the younger, genetically altered generations."
I touched her again, and now my hands were gentle. I gave her a hug, and she returned it. I couldn't recall having gotten an honest hug from her before. She let her clothes fall away from her again, leaving us in a bare embrace. We spent the next hour of the night nuzzling, screwing, and generally comforting one another. But when she finally fell asleep again, I found that I couldn't join her. She'd transferred nightmares from her head into mine. Damn, how I hated those squids. Chapter 14 Tribune Deitch was a hard-ass old battle-axe, or at least that's how the legionnaires in Varus thought of her. It wasn't an entirely fair assessment. Sure, she had a stern face, and she was at least 35 physically, having stored her permanent record at that age. But the real problem was she'd come from the Iron Eagles. For a Varus man, that meant trouble. Iron Eagles was one of the three most prestigious legions Earth maintained. They'd been the third to ever be commissioned, after Germanica and Victrix. Of the three, they had the reputation of being the best fighting unit humanity had yet to produce. The trouble was one of culture. Varus was a tough outfit, too. We'd seen plenty of action. We weren't afraid of anything, and we tended to get the job done no matter what. The Iron Eagles, however, were much more by the book. They were elite. There's no denying it. But they were more like Eagle Scouts when compared to the pirates who ran wild in Legion Varus. As a result of this culture class, Tribune Deitch and I, well, we just didn't often see eye to eye.
"Let me get this straight, Centurion McGill," she said to me the next morning when I checked in about 40 minutes late. "You left Central last night, taking our top scientist with you, and you got lost in the city?"
"We didn't get lost, not exactly, sir. We knew exactly where we were."
"But you turned off your tappers. No one could locate you on the grid. Do you realize a full unit of techs and MPs spent the night combing the city for you two?"
Florimel, who was standing next to me, looked mortified. She stared at the puffcrete floor, humiliated and upset. I was standing in a much jauntier pose. My beret was riding on my head just where it ought to be, and my Legion's wolf's head patch was proudly displayed on my sleeve. After last night, when I'd finally gotten an inkling of what was in store for me on Epsilon Leprous, I was having a hard time taking Deitch seriously. Winslade was off to my right, wearing a smug expression. He liked watching me get a good dressing down almost as much as Harris liked to see me get executed. Sometimes I wasn't sure why I ever gave that weasel a break.
"Dr. Florimel," Deitch said, turning toward her next, "are you aware that you were breaking your oath, that your freedoms here at Central are dependent on always being traceable?"
Deitch was calling her doctor because she was, after all, a foreign scientist. As the rogue worlders had never bothered with family names, Dr. Florimel was about the best thing she could come up with.
"Yes, Tribune. I apologize without reservation."
"Indeed. Well, I think the real problem here is McGill. He's led countless good people astray, if the stories are to be believed."
"Whoa, now," I said.
Don't let idle gossip sway your opinion, Tribune. A lot of people tend to think my methods are unorthodox, but they have a hard time arguing with the results.
Winslade jumped in, unable to restrain himself.
Tribune Deitch, if I may be so bold, this man was under my command recently, and I feel I might be able to come up with an appropriate punishment for his insubordination.
I glared at him. Winslade wanted to be my jailer. That was the last thing I wanted. He was kind of pissing me off, too. Where did he get off talking about administering punishments after what we'd pulled off together in the pits only yesterday?
Deitch looked Winslade up and down.
No,
she said at last.
He's under Primus Graves's command. He'll handle it.
But, sir,
Deitch was already walking away. She'd spun around on her heel and never looked back at us. Like I said, she was a hard ass. I had some respect for her, but not as much as I did for Graves or Drusus. That kind of thing had to be earned in my book.
McGill,
Winslade hissed at me.
Why didn't you say something?
Like what? You're the one who jumped in and started talking.
What if Deitch begins to pry? Not everything about this mission is well known.
I blinked at him, not getting the message entirely. So what if Deitch knows we're going to Epsilon Leprous? Is it really that big of a secret?
Who told you about that, McGill?
Graves demanded from my right. I turned to face him, and I manufactured a welcoming smile. There you are, sir. I'm supposed to report to you, I guess. What are your orders?
My orders are for you to tell me who leaked classified information. Was it Florimel here? She's one step above a prisoner of war. Did you realize that, McGill?
Florimel looked like she wanted to shrink into the floor. After living for decades under squid rule, she was terrified of authority figures.
No, sir, I said loudly. It wasn't her. Imperata Turov told me.
Winslade made a gargling sound. You really should get that looked at, Primus, I told him, tossing him a concerned glance. We're going into deep space soon, and I wouldn't want to see you put down over a bad illness.
Graves looked back and forth between us.
Imperator Turov, he said. She's also the one who authorized your exit from Central in the first place. Isn't that right, McGill? With our prized lead scientist in tow?
That's right, Primus. She surely did.
Winslade was glaring now, but I didn't entirely get why. Turov outranked all of us. If she wanted to go off script, well, hell, she could get away with it. She wore more brass sunbursts than anyone present.
Well, then,
Graves said,
I'll have to report this to Equestrian Drusus.
That got everyone's attention. Drusus was the man at the top of this pyramid we called Central. He wore 3 sunbursts, and he outranked everyone in the sector. You'd have to go to the chiefs of staff in Geneva to find someone of higher stature. Winslade began ticking off his fingers then.
1, 2, 3 levels. You're really going to bounce this up that far, are you, Graves? Why can't you handle a discipline issue yourself?
Graves turned on him. They were both the same rank in the same legion, but there was no love lost between the two.
McGill is my problem, Primus, Graves said. I'd appreciate it if you'd exit gracefully from this situation.
Request noted,
Winslade said primly. He then turned around on his heel and stalked away. Graves and I looked after him.
You know where that little man is headed, don't you, sir? I asked.
To Turov. He'll rat on us, of course. Don't worry, I'm well aware of his loyalties. What I don't get is how you always get yourself into these things, McGill. Does Florimel here know what kind of rep you have on Earth? That's what I thought, he said, and he turned toward Florimel. Ma'am, do you know what a cad is? A scoundrel? A playboy? A philandering man-whore?
Oh, now, I said, that's just not cool, Primus.
Florimel said, looking concerned. I have some idea. Not all of those terms are familiar, but are you saying Centurion McGill will tell a woman anything to procure sex?
Exactly. You've been warned. He's trouble, and not just for you.
I shook my head, flabbergasted, but Graves was already walking away.
Left with Florimel, eyeing me carefully, I turned to her with my best smile. "What's on your mind?" I asked.
"How many women have you slept with since we last met?"
she asked, simply. I said, not knowing how to answer that question. If I told the truth, which was that I wasn't sure and had no exact count, she probably wouldn't be happy. But then again, I didn't want to lie.
"I see," she said, studying my face. "Graves spoke the truth. I've been deceived. Here on Earth, and back home on Rogue World."
She turned away to go. I reached out a hand and gently stopped her. Leaning close, I spoke into her ear.
"I didn't lie about other women," I said. "You never asked about them. For what it's worth, whatever we shared was real to me. We've experienced a lot, here and out among the stars."
She looked down at my hand.
"Am I under arrest, Centurion?"
"No, of course not," I said, letting go of her instantly. Florimel walked away, and just like that, I'd been dumped. I frowned after her and Graves. People could be so touchy sometimes.
"McGill,"
Winslade asked, puffing as he came trotting back to me.
"Tell Graves I have direct orders for him from Imperator Turov. She's been trying to get hold of him on his tapper, but he isn't answering. What did you do to make him pull a stunt like that? Unplugging is a move out of your playbook, not his."
I gazed after Florimel, only half listening. "Don't worry about it, Winslade," I said over my shoulder. "Graves has already administered his punishment. Drusus won't need to get involved, not now."
"Really? What should I tell Turov?"
"Tell her she can untie the knots in her panties. This crisis is over." Grinning, Winslade worked his tapper.
"You didn't,"
I asked him. He nodded, lifting his tapper so I could see.
"I took the liberty of recording your words and relaying them directly. Don't worry, the Imperator enjoys junior officers making public references concerning her undergarments. She really does."
Winslade walked away, laughing. Whatever respect I'd gained for the man yesterday in the pit, I'd lost all over again today. Chapter 15 Before I knew it, Legion Varus had shipped out. Nostrum was the name of our fast transport, and I was happy to see she was still in good shape after our last deployment. Nostrum was a sleek, comfortable ship. Unlike the usual rented Imperial transport I'd experienced, she had an officially human-centered design. In comparison to older ships we'd lost in past campaigns like Corvus and Minotaur, Nostrum provided real comfort and an excellent simulated view of the stars. Almost every chamber had a ceiling or a wall that appeared to show the cosmos as we passed by it all. That was a damned good thing on this journey, because we were headed pretty far out, and it felt good to be able to mark your progress.
"You see that one?"
Natasha asked me about a month into the journey.
"That's Rigel, isn't it?"
"That's right. We're headed that way, and the blue-white giant seems to get bigger every day."
She was right. Rigel was getting big. It already looked like a headlight at the far end of a tunnel. The blue shade was distinct, and I had to wonder how bright it would look when we finally reached Epsilon Leporis.
40,000 times as bright as our star,"
Natasha said in a dreamy tone. There wasn't any kind of technology, science, gizmo, or natural wonder that didn't turn this girl's brain on. I admired that about her. She wasn't just a thin girl with a pretty face, she was as smart as anyone I knew. Smarter even, maybe, than Etta. But Etta had street smarts, part of me argued. Just thinking about my daughter made my expression falter.
"What's wrong?"
Natasha asked, watching me.
"Just thinking about home, about my family."
She reached up a hand and ran it over my back absently. Kivi walked by right then, and she curled her lip into a disgusted twist. She made a little spitting sound, too. Then she passed by, and she disappeared. Natasha dropped her hand from my back. I missed her touch immediately.
"What's wrong with her?"
she demanded, staring down the passageway.
She's got Carlos wrapped around her little finger. Isn't that good enough for her?
Nope, I said. All men belong to Kiwi, according to Kiwi.
I deal with the other techs in our unit every day. She's the only one who's never been friendly.
That's because you're too skinny and too cute. That's two strikes in her book.
Irritating woman.
My gaze shifted back to the stars. How long until we make planet fall?
3 weeks, she said. Long enough to get in one more round of training.
I winced at that. I'd already died twice since we'd left Earth. Just thinking about the last time made my throat hurt. Absently, I rubbed at the base of my neck. Staring at Rigel, I didn't even notice at first that Natasha was staring up at me.
You're different, she said.
How do you mean?
You haven't made a pass at me, and I've been standing here with you for nearly half an hour.
Am I missing a bet here? She laughed.
I didn't say that.
Natasha looked down and fooled with her tapper, but I could tell she was just avoiding my eye. She had my radar up now, whether that had been her intention or not. Some people might think I'm about as subtle with a woman as the proverbial bull in a china shop. But that's old news. I like to think I've become more refined in my methods these days. You still working with Florimel down in the shops? I asked nonchalantly. Her face snapped back up to gaze at me intently.
It's true, then, she declared. You are still involved with her. I'd heard you'd gotten together back on Earth, but I—
Leaning over, I snaked a kiss. She pulled back in alarm at first, but then she let me do it, pressing her lips to mine briefly.
What was that?
She asked when I went back to looking at the stars. Just something I felt like doing, I said. And no, Florimel and I didn't last long. Even before we got aboard Nostrum, she became cold and distant. She's married to her work, I think. Besides, I think it bothers her that I die all the time.
That bothers me, too. I don't see how you frontline troops can keep your sanity. I haven't died for years.
I chuckled. I have a feeling we're going to fix that problem of yours right up when we get to this particular hellhole.
What did Florimel say about it? I know she's been out there.
Yeah, nothing good. I gather it's hot and arid, with a smoky sky like orange flame.
I've studied the star. It's aging, becoming bloated. It's already swallowed the nearest planets. Think about how our sun would look if it had grown big enough to consume Mercury.
I thought about that, and I didn't find it encouraging. That was the moment. I knew it was from my vast experience. My arm lifted slowly, surely, up to slide over her shoulders. It felt like the most natural thing in the world to do, for both of us. But I never got to make another move on her. Right about then, everything went to hell in a handbasket, as my grandma used to say. Klaxons went off all over the ship. The deck heaved, settled. Then the wall became the floor, and we slammed into it. The image of Rigel and all her sister stars winked out, replaced by a blank panel of iridescent white. "What's happening?" I demanded, lifting Natasha and setting her on her feet.
"If I didn't know better, I'd say we're making an emergency exit out of our warp bubble."
That threw me for a loop. In my considerable time spent traveling in space, warp bubbles had always been safe, at least for the ship itself. The Alcubierre drive moved our ship faster than the speed of light, not by applying terrific thrust, but rather by warping space in a bubble around the ship. Such a bubble, or field, had to be carefully maintained in order to keep the ship moving, and so my first suspicion was that our ship had suffered some kind of catastrophic systems failure. Natasha had the same thought.
"I have to get to the engine rooms. I'm sorry, James."
"Don't be," I told her. "Just move your butt." She did, and I watched her race all the way down the passageway until she vanished. Walking the other way toward my unit's module, I wondered why a woman's tail section looked better walking than it did running. It made no sense to me, but neither did a lot of the cosmos. "McGill," a voice called out of my tapper. "Primus Graves, what's happening, sir?"
"We've been knocked out of warp. Tune into command chat."
As a ground pounder, I normally kept the officer-only command chat channel turned off.
During Nostrum's long flight, I'd have been treated to an endless stream of techno-babble from the flight crew if I hadn't. Obeying Graves, I soon got an earful. "We're completely out of warp. Radiation has stabilized. Ever got a breach?" "Negative. No venting detected by the AI." Those first voices had been crewmen, guys I didn't know. But then a voice broke in that I did recognize.
"This is Tribune Deitch. Captain, can you give me an update? What is our situation?"
"Tribune, I don't understand it. All systems on the drive checked green, but all of a sudden it was like we hit turbulence."
"Could it be a pocket of mass?" she asked. "A comet, or some other chunk of dark matter between the stars?"
"I don't know, sir. The ship's warp bubble should plow through or around that. Only a really big mass like a planet could do this. But in that case, we'd all be dead."
"Captain, it's clear that we hit something, or that our engines failed us. What's your best theory?"
The captain hesitated. "It's only a thought, but it seems like we hit another warp bubble."
"Really? How would that be possible?"
"Another ship passing through the same space at the same time. A one in a quadrillion shot, I know, but that's what it seems like."
"What would happen exactly if you are correct?"
"The two fields would disrupt one another, and both ships would be tossed out of warp. Damage could result to one or both ships or their drives."
"Very well. Assess and report. Come back to me in 5 minutes. Deitch out."
All right, Tribune," the captain said. I could hear in his voice that the Nostrum's captain was put out. After all, Deitch was ordering him around like he was a shuttle pilot. Aboard this ship, while in flight, he was supposed to be the judge, jury, and executioner, even though technically Deitch outranked him. Switching back over to a private line with Graves, I was concerned. "Sounds like we're in trouble, sir," I said. "Permission to mobilize my unit?"
"What for?"
"You heard the captain, sir. One in a quadrillion chance. I don't even play the lottery. If another ship hit us, it did so on purpose."
"But how could another ship even locate us in warp, much less time it right to disrupt our warp bubble?"
"I don't know any of that, sir, but I don't believe in coincidences of this kind. Remember, we're in hostile space. This whole region is old squid territory, and it's far from friendly to Earthers."
"Hmm," Graves said. "Our orders are to secure everything and hold on. But I think it's not a bad precaution to put a unit into combat gear. We can always revive you later if things go wrong."
"That's mighty considerate of you, sir," I said. But he'd already closed the channel. Figuring I had clear orders to mobilize, I kicked it into gear and contacted my adjuncts. Harris, Toro, and Leeson all reported in, and they were surprised at my demands. "Suit up," I said. "I want everyone in the central chamber of our module in 10 minutes. Lock and load, people. This is no drill." Not one of them argued with me. They knew better by now. They just jumped into action. Tuning into my unit's chat line, I heard the general hubbub of officers and non-coms screaming at the regulars. My unit was gearing for battle, and for once, it wasn't going to be some kind of knife fight in an artificial pit. Chapter 16 Nostrum spun for a short time, but she was a new ship with high-class stabilizers. She righted herself and returned to her previous course. Her warp drive, however, had been knocked out of commission. I could hear the rumbling, almost like a deep, sick cough, as it shivered through the spine of the great ship.
"Centurion," Harris asked me, meeting me at the entrance to our module. "Some of the troops are a little banged up, but we've got 95% effectiveness."
95%? Tell those who are hugging their bunks I'll recycle them if they can't carry a rifle in 3 minutes.
"Yes, sir."
Harris boomed, and he whirled on the unit regulars, seeking out slackers of every stripe. Leeson walked up and chuckled.
"Harris is still a veteran in his heart," he said. "You set the right man on them."
"Yep," I said. "He reminds me of a terrier hunting up rats in the barn." Making a steady stream of threats and accusations, Harris raced around the various bunk rooms and managed to roust all but two of my troops into gear. "What happened to the last two?" I asked him a moment later.
"Well, one of them is Adjunct Toro, sir."
"I'll talk to her personally. What about the other one?"
That was Lau."
"Was?" Harris avoided my eye.
"I thought he was sleeping, sir," he said. "But it turns out he's dead."
I nodded, checking Lau's room. There was a blackened burn hole in the man's forehead. It was obvious Harris had found him goofing off and had taken extreme action.
I could tell Harris was worried I'd chew him out or even put him on report. "You're right," I said to Harris, who was peering over my shoulder uncomfortably. "It was an honest mistake, and Lau made it."
"Thank you, sir."
Next stop was Toro's quarters. She had a tiny single bunk in a private cubicle. It wasn't roomy like my own commander's quarters, but it was better than you got at a grunt.
"Toro!" "McGill, thank God it's you, sir. Harris was just in here."
She trailed off, spotting Harris in my wake.
"Sir,"
she said,
"I'm injured. It's nothing serious, but I'm going to have to pass."
"Adjunct Toro," I said, "this ship is under attack."
"Attack? How could that be? We're in warp. I thought it was another of your drills."
"Turn on command chat, listen in, and get an education." Toro did so while I watched the rest of the troops gear up and form squads. Turning around, I found Toro limping up to me.
"I'm sorry, sir,"
she said, looking worried.
"I had no idea."
For a few seconds, I toyed with my pistol. I'd seen Graves make motivational speeches in just such a manner many times. "As a new Centurion," I told her, "people seem to think they can scoot by with me. But they're mistaken."
"Of course, Centurion. I wouldn't..."
"Personnel who are critically injured in early action," I continued loudly, "before there have been enough casualties to glut the revival teams, are often best recycled." She swallowed hard, took out an injectable, and jammed it into her knee.
"I feel better already, Centurion."
"That's good. Don't fall behind. Oh, and Toro, your platoon is on point for the rest of this action."
"Got it,"
she said, and she hustled out into our module's main chamber. Amused, Harris came up to me after she went by.
"You've got the touch, McGill. I wouldn't have expected it, but it's undeniable. Graves himself couldn't have gotten these people moving any faster."
I made no comment. Harris was right, or at least I like to think I was in Graves's league. In any case, I definitely developed a serious disdain for slackers. That isn't to say I wouldn't let a good man slide in other ways. If a couple wanted to share a bunk at night, for instance, well, that was their business. I didn't care at all as long as they fought hard on the line come morning. By the time we were fully mobilized and marching down the central passage of the ship's spine, we'd wasted 7 precious minutes. I was a little annoyed, having felt we should have been able to do better.
"McGill,"
Graves called a few minutes later.
"Primus, 3rd unit is ready for action. We're..."
"I know where you are. Keep going and take the tubes up to Gold Deck. I'm deploying your unit outside the Centop chambers. You'll cover the main guns down to the automated magazine chamber. Don't take any crap from the crew. Tell them you're approved security troops courtesy of Legion Varus, but try to stay out of their way."
The losers in fleet liked to think they could take care of their own defense, but as real combat troops, we knew better.
"Isn't that where they control the broadside, sir?" I asked Graves. "Is there any trouble in local space?"
"Not yet. But if you were invading a ship like this, which vital subsystem would you take out first?"
The enemy ship's guns, sir?"
"Bingo. Move out."
Pinwheeling my arm, I got the unit trotting. Toro's group was in the lead, as I directed. She was sweating inside her helmet, but she didn't complain or even make eye contact as she jogged by. I felt proud of her. It wasn't the first time a Varus soldier had fought on a bum knee, and it wouldn't be the last. I'd done it myself on several occasions. After Toro's platoon, Leeson's moved out, then Harris brought up the rear of the column. I ran with Leeson in order to keep an eye on both ends of the formation. Legion Varus, like all of the independent outfits, was broken into 10 cohorts of around 1,200 men each, plus auxiliaries. My unit, the 3rd, contained a mix of heavy and light troops. Harris had the light troops, Toro the heavies, and Leeson's platoon contained most of the specialists. In an open battle on a planet's surface, the light troops would usually lead the formation. That's because they could run faster, and they carried snap rifles, weapons capable of light damage at long range. But when carrying out operations in an enclosed space, there was no room to maneuver. Most commanders liked to lead with their heaviest troops in close quarters, and I'd opted for that strategy. Heavies like Toro's troops were powered armor with exoskeletal strength to help with the load.
Every member of her team was a regular, an experienced soldier, well-trained with Morph rifles and Force blades. Partly due to that powerful kit, I felt good about putting her group in the lead. When we reached the tube that carried people up and down between decks, I called a halt, then ordered the first squad forward. Toro handled all the details. I watched with interest.
"Anything happening outside the ship, Centurion?" Harris asked me.
"I'm listening to command chat the same as you. Nothing yet." Harris nodded and popped open his faceplate to scratch stubble.
"Let's hope this is all some kind of screw-up by our techs."
"Yeah, as long as we can get back into warp, that would be the best outcome." He looked at me in sudden alarm.
"You haven't heard anything about engine damage, have you, sir?"
"I know we're not able to go back into warp right now. They're working on it." Harris looked worried, but he didn't say anything. "We're pretty far out from Earth," I said, giving voice to his thoughts.
He nodded. "Over 200 lights from home. That means a rescue is going to be long in coming, if it becomes necessary. In fact, the brass back home might call the whole thing a failure and leave us to rot."
"Nah," I said. "The ship is too valuable. They don't have very many fast transports like Nostrum. Not yet."
I patted a strut as if to comfort the ship. Harris flickered a smile at me. I wasn't sure if he'd bought my bullshit or not, but at least he seemed to appreciate the effort. "I'm going forward to see what's taking Toro so long to get her heavies up that tube."
"Give her a kick in the ass for me, sir."
Moving along the line, I clacked my armor into that of others for 50 steps or so before catching up with Toro. "What's the holdup, adjunct?" I demanded.
"Sir, the first squad hasn't released the tube yet. The doors are still shut."
I glanced at her. "When was your last report from your lead squad?" I looked down and I saw she'd been fooling with her knee again. She had the front plate over her leg joint open and I saw blood in there. Using my helmet's HUD, I logged into her local chat and contacted the squad leader. Or at least, I tried to. Then I brought up my status display. I immediately sucked in my breath. We were getting red readings. The squad had been wiped out. "Flip down your faceplate, adjunct," I shouted at Toro. She did so, and a moment later she looked shocked.
"I didn't know, sir."
"Relay that status to the rest of the unit. Take the manual route."
"The stairs, sir?"
"Right. I'm contacting Graves." Gritting her teeth, she began shouting and urging her troops to advance up the stairway, but I thought the better of it and stopped her. "I don't want to lose another squad of heavies. For all we know, radiation has leaked through up there. Harris!"
"What's up, Centurion?"
"Your lights are on. Scouting mission up that stairway. I need info like yesterday."
"Oh, shit. On it, sir."
Harris's people went racing by a few seconds later. Harris gave Toro the finger as he ran by. In the meantime, I'd been trying to contact Graves. He wasn't answering. No one was answering up there on Gold Deck. Rolling back my neck, I stared up at the ceiling, wishing I could see through the decks to where Gold Deck was laid out. What the hell was going on up there? Logging into command chat, I cleared my throat. "This is Centurion McGill. Be advised, I've lost a squadron of heavies while trying to advance to Gold Deck. Their life signs are all showing as red. I'm also out of contact with Primus Graves and Gold Deck in general. If anyone has information, please share." A chorus of voices came back at me. I'd been off the command chat line for a few minutes while leading my squad. It was too confusing to have local voice, unit chat, and command chat all going at the same time.
"McGill, this is Winslade. Is your unit ready to fight?"
"Yes, sir," I said. "We're in a full kit at the bottom of the..."
"Then get up here, please. We're under assault. It was very sudden. Most of the crew up here on Gold Deck is already dead."
A chill ran through me. What could have killed so many so fast? What could have struck so quickly that the general alarm hadn't even gone out yet? I didn't know, but as I moved into the stairwell, which was really more of a switchback passage with handholds, I figured I was going to find out soon enough. Chapter 17. About 1,000 steps. That's what it took to make it all the way up to Gold Deck. It wasn't as bad as it sounded, however. People in powered armor almost had their legs moved for them. What's more, the artificial gravity was toned down in the stairways, and you hardly had to touch the steps. You could sort of hop and just glide over 5 or 6 at a time. Once we all got the rhythm of it, the motion was kind of like ice skating. The experience might have been fun if we weren't thinking of the sudden death that seemed to lie ahead of us. Harris was the first one to report back. His light troops had lost us long ago, pulling ahead of Toro's heavies even though I'd told them to stay together.
"Contact!" he boomed in my ear.
Up above, I could hear the chatter of snap rifles on full auto. "What have you got, Harris? Report!" We all kept moving upward, and for a few seconds I wondered if Harris had been hit.
I don't know yet, sir. We've spotted movement. We're engaged. They're firing back at us.
With what?
Seems like explosive pellets or bullets, something ballistic. Can you press through? We're bunched up on these damn stairs.
Leave one squad engaged. Fall back with the rest. I'm moving up the heavies. I gave Toro a nod. She was a little pale, but she was game. Leading her first squad, she headed up while Harris's lights came back down, squeezing past. It occurred to me we were too vulnerable to explosives on this damn stairway.
"Kibi," I called out. "Get some of your buzzers up there. I want to see the action. Leeson, spread out into the level below gold deck."
"Blue deck, sir. The bio people aren't going to like that.
Screw 'em."
He chuckled, but he complied. He got his men off the stairway, and when the bulk of Harris's lights came down the stairs, I shunted them off to the side, too.
"Toro," I said, "you got the ball. Break us out of this shit."
"On it, sir."
She sent in her best, a squad of heavies with morph rifles slung and force blades out. Each heavy trooper had weapons that were constructed of electromagnetic fields. Through an alien trick of physics, these shaped force fields had a sharpness beyond that of any metal blade. They also burned whatever they touched, and they could be extended outward from the length of a dagger to several yards. Watching on my HUD and my tapper, I got Kiwi's buzzer feed and gasped. The heavies burst past Harris's troops. Most of them were on the ground. Their light weapons had proven relatively ineffective. The heavies were hit with a storm of heavy explosive bullets as they rose up out of the stairway and rushed through the doorway. The big double doors themselves were smoking and broken, hanging by their hinges on either side. What made me gasp wasn't the mess on the floor or the incoming hail of fire. It was the first sight I caught of the enemy. They were giants, armored giants of the type I hadn't laid eyes on since Earth had been invaded years ago.
"We've got litimates," I boomed. "Heavy troops, two full squads of them. Toro, send up all your weaponeers with belchers. We're going to burn them down."
"Weaponeers advancing."
Harris came up to me then. He was panting and had his hands on his hips.
"Is that the best idea, sir? They'll go crazy if you..."
"Shut up, Harris." He did so immediately, and I didn't even look at him. My mind was whirling. What were littermates doing out here in the middle of nothing? Sure, I knew we were headed for Epsilon Leporis. That was their homeworld and all. But we weren't close yet. We still had nearly 100 lights to go. It didn't matter, I told myself. It didn't matter at all. I was going to kill them. I was going to kill them all, and it was that simple. The heavies engaged in close, losing two in the charge to incoming fire. Fortunately, we were on a spaceship and didn't have to run across a half mile of open ground. They were fighting hand to hand a moment later, and I took that opportunity to rush up with a group of weaponeers.
"All at once now," I told them. "Narrow aperture. Take careful aim."
The weaponeers formed a firing squad around me. Toro's heavies were fighting an odd sword fight with the enemy, trading hammer blows with the bigger soldiers. The enemy, however, had relatively primitive swords made of metal. If they hit straight on, their swords were sheared off as often as not, flashing sparks as the fields struck steel. Still, Toro's group was outmatched by the weight of the enemy. They couldn't take them down without help. When I had five weaponeers prepped up, I ordered them to fire at once for the heads. Four hit their targets. Smoking and wreathed in flames, they went down in a heap. Their brothers went berserk then, and they stopped playing around with Toro's heavies. They dropped their swords and grabbed the heavy troops with massive fists, trying to tear the men apart with their bare hands. Blood sprayed and smoked. Most of it was from the enemy's side, but not all. Two heavies were taken apart, literally. Their limbs were ripped off, their armor ignored. Toro's troops hacked them down. Leeson's weaponeers advanced and shot the flopping bodies, several of which were still struggling to rise.
"Well, well, well," said a familiar voice behind me. I turned slowly. It was Winslade. He had his arms crossed and a smug smile on his face.
"Don't tell me this was all some kind of exercise, Primus," I said dangerously.
"Seemed real enough to me. Didn't it to you?"
Before I could wring his neck, another voice spoke up off to my side. It was that of Battle Axe Deitch.
"Stand down, Centurion. You fought well. The scenario wasn't fair, but it wasn't meant to be."
I blinked at her, then looked around as more Gold Deck people appeared in a steady stream.
"Is this really happening, sirs?"
"Yes," Deitch said. "And for what it's worth, I didn't want to do this. It's part of our commitment, you see."
"That's right," Graves said. "You too, huh?" "Let's not sour your success with complaints, McGill. The element of confusion was required. We're trying to impress the natives of Epsilon Leporis, remember?"
"Well," I said, kicking at a steaming body at my feet.
"Did we impress them?"
Graves nodded.
"Enough to be allowed to continue. We've proven we're worthy of our invitation."
"Was everyone in on this? Everyone but me?"
"No one below the rank of Primus knew anything," Deitch told me. "That's why we simulated an attack on Gold Deck. Our sparring partner specified that they wanted a convincing test of our forces. In this case, the purpose of the test was to see how one of our small units performed without higher-level officers to direct them."
"This is really weird," I said, feeling angry and somewhat cheated.
Deitch looked at Graves. "You can handle the rest of this, Primus. I've got other things to attend to in my office."
She sauntered away, and Winslade followed immediately in her wake. It looked to me like he was trying to court a new master. I looked after them both sourly. "That's Deitch," Graves said as he came up beside me and clapped me on the shoulder. His gauntlets rang against my epaulets, and that irritated me. Everything about this irritated me. "She always passes the buck," Graves went on. "Do you know that she made a huge point of sitting out this entire contest? Winslade and I were in complete command of the situation. At least that's what she said until it became clear you were going to win. Then she rushed out here to get her face into the after-action vids."
"Sir," I said, "this exercise was total horseshit."
"Oh, come off it, McGill," he said. "Just think of all the times you've pissed me off with some kind of trick."
I did for a second, and I shrugged. He had a point, but I didn't feel like admitting it. "What happened to that first squad we sent up?" I asked. He led me to the transport tube landing zone. It was kind of like a big elevator lobby without any mirrors. A mass of bodies were strewn there. "They were all murdered the second they stepped off the elevator?" I asked.
"Right. That was supposed to happen to more of your men to even out the contest, but then you rushed up the stairway and flanked the ambushers. Good call, by the way."
"We outnumbered them badly from the start," I said. "Did they really think they could win?"
"They did, because they had many advantages. The thinking was that you'd lose more of your men right here at the tubes than you did. If you hadn't outmaneuvered them, they probably would have skunked you."
"Why did you pick me for this surprise drill, sir?" I asked.
He looked at me questioningly. "I didn't. You picked yourself. Remember when you contacted me and suggested you should mobilize your unit, just in case?"
"Yeah."
"That's when you volunteered."
I heaved a sigh. It was the oldest lesson in Legion Varus lore. Never volunteer for anything. On that simple point, I'd failed. "Wait a second, Primus," I said. "What about the warp bubble accident? Were we kicked out of warp or not?"
"Yeah," he said thoughtfully. "I thought that was overdramatic. It seemed dangerous, too. I'm not really sure how that all played in. We could have just come out of warp, rendezvoused with these troops from Bloodworld. That's what the natives call it, by the way. Bloodworld."
"Sounds inviting."
"It's not meant to."
About the warp collision, I said, thinking it over. Was that meant to make the entire scenario seem more real?
Not in any briefing I attended. It wasn't mentioned at all. We were simply told we would meet with a Blood World ship, take on borders, and play out this battle. That's all.
Turning my head back toward the pile of gigantic bodies, I frowned. Maybe we should consider reviving a few of these guys and asking them some questions. Graves chuckled.
There are several key problems with that idea, McGill. First off, they don't have tappers recording their engrams. We could copy their bodies from DNA samples, but they would be mindless.
Oh, right. Are they catching a revive back on Blood World, then? He looked at me like I was stupid. It was an expression I was well familiar with.
Of course not, he said. These monsters wouldn't even fit in a standard-issue revival machine. They came here and they died and that's it.
You mean, I permed all these guys?
That's right, if you can even call it that. I mean, for normal people who've never even heard of a revival machine, it's just called dying, isn't it?
I guess so, I said, somewhat disturbed. Graves walked away, shaking his head at my foolishness, but my eyes lingered on the stack of dead. Sure, they were somewhat alien and monstrous, but they were mostly human underneath. It seemed kind of unfair for the legions to use them as target practice, and we could just bounce back the next day. Troubled, I left Goldeck behind and headed down to the labs. I had a lot of unanswered questions buzzing in my head. Chapter 18. On the way down to the labs, I took the opportunity to strip off my armor and weapons, tossing the whole kit into my unit's module. There was plenty of blood and scorch marks on my gear, and I didn't think anyone down below wanted to see that. When I reached the labs, I was in for a surprise. Florimel was working in the depths of Nostrum's lower decks, right alongside Natasha. Just spotting the two of them working together made me halt in my tracks. These two women both had a claim on me. Natasha's claim was far older, but Florimel's was fresh and new. Standing there for a few long seconds, I wasn't quite sure what to do. The labs themselves were spacious, super clean, and full of strange equipment. This was the deck that belonged to the techs. Unlike Blue Deck, the level that every ship had, which was inhabited purely by bio-specialists and their victims, this one never seemed to be named after a color. People just called it the labs or engineering and left it at that. I suspected it was because the region wasn't quite as restricted as other areas were. Gold Deck was for commanders and flight personnel only. It usually encompassed the ship's bridge and the offices for all the brass aboard any given transport. Gold Deck's unique purpose formed a good reason to restrict access. Likewise, Blue Deck was crewed by the paranoid bio-types. They operated like a priesthood, caring for their incredibly expensive and incredibly useful revival machines. Oh, sure, any bio could cure a cold or cancer if she felt like it, but the main service they provided was the revival of dead troops, and everyone knew it. The tech people were different. They were important, sure, but they were more down-to-earth and approachable. They handled a wide variety of problems, everything from servicing shipboard equipment to coming up with analyses about astrophysics and alien psychology. The breadth of their responsibilities forced them to work with others every day, and that seemed to make them easier to deal with. A finger tapped my back while I stood in the doorway. Startled, I turned and looked down. There was Keevy giving me a disgusted sneer.
"Can't decide which one to hit on today, McGill?"
she asked. I marveled at my poor timing. Keevy was a tech specialist herself. How likely was it that she'd show up right now? Together with Natasha and Florimel, I was in the presence of every tech girl I'd ever been involved with. The odds would have seemed longer except for the fact they were all techs. This was their deck, and I'd taken no precautions, such as contacting anyone before I came down here. I said, trying to think.
"Don't bother coming up with a lie," Keevy
said, and she scooted by me. As she did so, there was plenty of contact. Now, you have to understand that a man just hasn't been brushed up against properly until Kiwi's done it to you. She was a master. She rubbed every important part of herself against my side as she went by, making it all seem natural, accidental, and thrilling at the same time. We both knew full well there was plenty of room for her to scoot by in that open doorway without touching me at all. But that wasn't how Kiwi operated. I knew her game. She wasn't really promising me anything, nor was she too clueless to squeeze by neatly. She was trying to torture old James McGill. She wanted revenge on me after having caught me checking out two other women right in front of her. Unreasonable? Yes. Pure Kiwi? Definitely. Using my full knowledge of her nature to my advantage, I enjoyed the fleeting contact and let it go. I didn't chase her, make a comment, or even let my eyes drift after her well-rounded posterior. Soon she was gone, and I was able to think clearly again. I came to a firm decision. I walked up behind the Florimel and Natasha team, bold as brass, and laid one hand on each of their backs. My head poked between them as I did so. "What are you two working on?" I asked loudly. Startled, the girls eyed me, but they didn't pull away. Neither one of them knew I was touching the other. Sometimes it pays to be large and have a long reach.
"We're trying to figure out what happened to the warp field," Natasha said.
"Incorrect,"
Florimel said.
"We know what happened. We're trying to figure out why it happened."
Natasha's shoulders bunched up a bit in irritation. I couldn't blame her for that. Florimel liked to be precise, and all too often that urge came out sounding like she was calling other people morons. "Okay," I said. "But what's that thing on the table?"
"It's a section of the outer hull, James,"
Natasha said patiently. "That thing? Looks like a head-sized lump of charcoal."
"Extreme heat has been applied," Florimel explained, "along with some warping, radioactive fields, and torsion. In combination, this abuse caused this section of the hull to be reduced to this damaged state."
"You're telling me this lump of crap came off the outside of our ship?" I asked, and I gave a long, low whistle. "So what's the verdict? Did we hit another vessel or not?"
"Yes,"
Natasha said.
"No,"
Florimel said at almost the same instant. I looked from one to the other. Natasha wore a tight expression. I got the feeling Florimel was starting to get on her nerves.
"She means," Natasha explained, "that we didn't literally strike the other ship. We hit its wake. If we'd hit the other ship itself, well, we'd all be dead by now."
About then, Florimel pulled back a little and I blew it. I left my hands on both of the girls. She noticed this. And she looked confused.
"I don't know what it is that you're proposing, James," she told me.
"Huh?"
"You're touching both of us. This behavior doesn't quite correspond to your traditional gripping of the shoulder, but the nature of the signal is still unmistakable."
Frowning, Natasha stepped back. Even though I dropped my hands to my sides, she began to glare at me like she'd been molested or something. "Oh, come on," I said to both of them. "We're all friends here, working on a critical scientific mission. Grow up, ladies. Continue the briefing." It was a bold-as-brass play, but it was all I had. Fortunately, it seemed to work. Both of them turned slowly back to face their lump of melted space crap again. I suppressed a sigh of relief. Natasha began explaining about heat thresholds, force fields, and the unique properties of melting point temperatures in vacuum. Occasionally, Florimel corrected her on a tiny technical detail. I found the lecture less than fascinating. My hands, those bored, treacherous bastards, crept up again and almost touched each of the girls. To me, it sometimes seemed like my fingers have minds of their own. I managed to fight my sinister urges and clasped my hands behind my back for good. With a pasted-on smile, I strictly maintained the pretense that I cared about their burnt space rock. It was a sheer force of will. "Uh-huh," I said about 2 minutes later, sensing it was an appropriate moment to jump in. Look, ladies, this is fascinating, but I'm no tech. What I need to know is what happened. Did the Blood Worlders send out a ship and run it into our warp bubble or not?
That's not entirely clear, Natasha said. We think they tried to match our course and speed, but perhaps they got too close and caused the disruption. By the way, did you say Blood Worlders?
I did indeed. That's what they call themselves. Colorful, isn't it?